This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, beginning a four-part series, Climate Change and Environmental Threats to Health and Survival. This has been nearly 3 years of intensive research, reviewing thousands of scientific articles, more than 100 books, and interviewing some of the world's leading climatologists. Our senior research fellow, Richard Gale, spearheaded this project. The year 2017 was a record-breaking year for extreme weather and environmental catastrophes since records started being kept in the 19th century. The Arctic experienced temperatures up to 7 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. Many countries were baked in unusual heat waves, killing thousands. Incidents of droughts, extreme typhoons in the Pacific and hurricanes in the Atlantic, flash floods and wildfires erupted daily in the international news headlines. As recent as 2014, the World Meteorological Organization, following an analysis of NASA satellite footage of carbon dioxide movement around the planet, concluded that our warming planet has entered, quote, uncharted territory at frightening speed. But 2017 was also the year when the statistical figures came in for 2016, and the same organization reported that CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere rose at record speed. Currently, it is its highest level in 800,000 years. If anyone held any doubt that climate change is unreal, a fiction, or a fantasy, then 2017 should have been the awakening, a call to the most obstinate denialist. Scientists have warned about our current days of climate for several decades. For those who jumped on the bandwagon years ago when atmospheric and geological scientists voiced serious concerns about global warming and its dire consequences, it was a year with no huge surprises, except for the rapid acceleration of warming trends. We believe it is time that people, and more crucially, our entire species, accept the fact that climate change is the single most important threat to humanity's survival. Certainly a nuclear confrontation with North Korea is a horrifying scenario that could eliminate tens or even hundreds of millions of people. However, it is within humanity's means to avoid nuclear war with proper diplomacy. On the other hand, it is highly improbable whether we can do much to deter climate change. I wished I could be completely optimistic and say that everything that we have caused we can undo. I would be disingenuous. It would not be true. There was a time, 40 years ago, when we could have at least slowed down, if not stopped, many of the problems we're having, if we would have gone on a major campaign, if we would have had the honesty and the decency and the ethics and the morality to care for each other, and not overexploit our resources, not encourage people to live in places that were inhospitable to begin with, but also non-sustainable. If we didn't overdraw on the water supplies, if we did not overdestroy the lands with commercial monofarming of single crops genetically engineered, if we did not care about nature as much as we cared about profits, and therefore used the synthetic fertilizers and the high nitrogen in those fertilizers, which were a devastating impact upon marine life, including algae blooms in the largest dead zone in the world, which is right at the base of the Mississippi River. But unfortunately, if you ask the average person, what have you done personally each day to help lessen the impact of your footprint upon the globe, and you'll find the average person has done nothing. In fact, just the opposite. What they have done by eating a meat-based diet, by using an enormous amount of stuff, more often than not that they didn't need, by buying all the latest gadgets, by buying things that are hyper-sealed with excessive amounts of plastic, by not concerning themselves with where everything goes when it's thrown away, with the assumption it must go into a landfill instead of the reality of where it actually ends up. And people were not quick to get on any of the environmental and sustainable bandwagons. They thought, surely, if something gets that bad, we have some group of wise men and women that will come to our rescue. There will be a Marshall Plan on the environment, as there was a Marshall Plan to rebuild the very enemies that we had fought in the Second World War, Germany and Italy and other countries. We can do that for the environment. We can stop the ocean from increasing and coming inland. We can do that. We can prevent an earthquake in those areas that are susceptible, like California, Washington State, Oregon, and British Columbia. We have the means. We can certainly do something about excessively cold, excessively hot, extreme weather events. Surely we can. But the reality is we cannot. I interviewed the real-life character professor who Jeff Goldblum's character was based upon for Jurassic Park, the chaos theorist. And I ask a simple question. Is it possible to accurately predict with any mathematical model how quickly events will occur? And I was told no. I remember reading that the Larsen B ice shelf that buttresses up against Antarctica would take between 150 to 200 years before it would finally calve, break off, and dissolve into the oceans around Antarctica. 2 weeks later, that happened. We were told similarly that the Larsen C shelf would be a long time. Well, it was just a couple months after that before it calved, and it was the size of the state of Delaware. So right now, I can honestly and accurately say that there's not a person on this planet who can accurately predict when we will end up having major tipping points with negative or positive feedback loops that have devastating consequences to our lives. Some people predict, some scientists that I have interviewed, that it could be within the next 10 years. Others who are more optimistic say 15 to 20 years. None of the people that were interviewed said that we will not be impacted in a major way beyond 20 years. It's going to happen sooner. That we should consider is beyond our capability, because it takes between 10 to 20 years from the time we pollute until you see the full consequences. Natural forces are far beyond our technological know-how and methods to control powerful planetary forces, regardless of how many efforts to advance geoengineering or a dramatic shift to renewable energies are made. Perhaps it'll slow the pace of global warming a little, but it has its own destructive blowback. The Earth's history is a long story of numerous species birthing, evolving, and eventually going extinct. There is no manifest destiny for our species. There is no divine promise that humanity may not in the future follow in the footsteps of the dinosaurs. Our lives are not transcendent to nature, nor the multitude of other natural forces and animals and plants and microbes and other life forms and molecules upon which our existence depends. This is a simple truth that we must learn, and it must be learned quickly and without further delay. In a July issue of New York Magazine, journalist David Wallace Wells published a worst-case doomsday scenario of climate change's impact upon human society and the environment before the end of this century. The scientists I spoke with said those who are saying, well, 100 years from now, are disingenuous. Now, there's three mindsets on this. One, people simply are specialists in one given area And that they certainly know, and they are scholars on that. But what if they only have one small piece of a huge puzzle? Let's say they're an expert on the bleaching of the coral reefs. That's important because of all the other creatures in the sea that require those coral reefs to be abundant with life for them to be able to have life. So you know all about those. But another person knows about the acidification of the ocean. And another person is expert on the warming of the ocean. And another person is an expert on dead zones in the ocean. Now, you would imagine that all of those individuals will take that information and share it between them, have an interdisciplinary discourse. They will all be aware. You would be wrong. In point of fact, rare is the situation where a person in any way subjugates their own knowledge and expertise to that of another person or incorporates others' work. We tend to be a world that puts a value, a prize, on our differentiation of knowledge. What makes us unique and special and different from other people? What gives us the status in the pecking order? But we hold on to that. We hold it close to our consciousness because it also is a part of what allows us access to the media and research funds and speeches, honorarium, to be selected for various committees. But that's not a universalist. That is not a comprehensivist. That is not a vitalist. That is not someone who says, I have one piece of a giant puzzle about this world, and I must share that piece openly and honestly with all the other pieces before I can see how this puzzle comes together. So they're making predictions on things that they assume will not happen for 100 years, long beyond everyone's lifespan. And it's simply not true. And that brings up the second issue that we must contend with, where people know the truth, but they also are hyper-conservative. They choose to be as conservative as possible because they don't want to scare people. We are a nation, we are a world that cannot handle bad news. So we would rather be given half-truths rather than full knowledge. A half-truth means, okay, so we have a world and an environment that's in crisis. What can I do? I'm only one person. Surely what I eat and what I do each day with my air conditioner and my refrigerator and my washing machine and the amount of water I use is not really impacting anything. Yes, it is. If you were the only person, it wouldn't be. But you have 330 million Americans alone who are doing the same thing. And it's cumulative chaos. But also, you have a third element. And the third element is purely disingenuous. Those individuals who use their academic pedigree, their deep resumes from respected institutions to say that climate change is a hoax. They then take that information forth from think tanks, frequently that are funded by industries that profit because they do not have to be responsible for the consequences of their extraction of natural resources, whether it's coal or nuclear or oil or gas hydrofracking or agriculture or farming. They can do what they want to do, put money into foundation and front groups. Those people are handled by public relations experts and lobbyists who get them onto television, who convince possibly well-meaning hosts that it's all a hoax. And so how does the average person know what they're being told about the environment is real? They don't. It's taken tens of thousands of hours of research for us to get to the full truth and put all these disparate pieces of the puzzle together. So back to David Wallace Wells talking about, yeah, we're going to have a major problem by the end of this century. No, we're having it right now. If you doubt me, in July, we didn't have a problem in Southern California. In fact, we didn't have a problem yet in Northern California. But it happened in Northern California, in Napa Valley, in the great wine fields up there. And now it's happening all over California, where Jerry Brown on 60 Minutes recently said that the whole state is a 12-month fire zone, and fires that are hotter because the earth is hotter and it's drier. So we don't have to wait 100 years to see what looks like and feels like, if you're in it, an apocalyptic experience. I was personally in Florida, and I can tell you that with my home on the west coast, southwest coast of Florida, with a Category 4, with winds over 150 miles an hour, we're holding eyes on a building that was built to withstand a Category 5 hurricane, went up into the air and off by almost 100 yards. And you think, wow, and I'm still cleaning up from that. And that caused the largest evacuation in Florida history, and the largest amount of rain ever to pour anywhere that we're aware of poured with a Category 2 hurricane that was stalled off the coast of Texas near Houston and Galveston. Now tell those people, you don't have anything to worry about. It'll be 100 years before there's so much water that it's 9 feet high in your home. Or tell the people who experienced a Category 2 with Hurricane Sandy, or Category 3 with the hurricane that hit New Orleans and Louisiana and went across to Mississippi, Katrina. Depends upon where you live. It's very easy to be flippant about what's happening to someone else somewhere else in the world if it has not yet happened to you. It became the most read article in New York Magazine history. However, early in 2003, Cambridge University astrophysicist and philosopher Martin Rees released his influential IR Final Hour warning that the pace of humanity's destructive activities presents a 50-50 chance for our civilization to survive past the 21st century. Carcinogenic and unhealthy foods, high levels of deadly toxic chemicals and common everyday products are only minor risks compared to many of the postmodern technologies impacting our lives. Climate change combined with the genetic engineering of new viruses, synthetic biology, artificial intelligence, and the rape of the planet for its last remaining natural resources, according to Rees, is a recipe for certain disaster and will likely end in the extinction of our species. And while many scientists and most of the general public have acknowledged the fact that our anthropogenic climate change continue to hold enormous blind faith on human ingenuity and modern technology to prevent global warming's end game, it is too little and too late. We are in the process of end game as we speak. Rees and a distinguished multidisciplinary consortium of scientists at the Cambridge Center for the Study of Existential Risks acknowledged a darker side beyond our over-reliance upon technological solutions in nuclear power and geoengineering and genetic manipulation of nature, etc. Rees's 50-50 survival prediction was largely ignored after its publication over a decade ago. Nobody wants to accept that our survival is predicted upon a flip of a coin. Today, his predictions are being re-evaluated and his supporters are increasing. And this is why Wallace Wells' New York Magazine article is so important. There are more than ample reasons to fear the consequences of climate change on our health and food security, our livelihoods, our well-being, and the survival of future generations, including our children. Remember, extinction is forever. There's no coming back from it. Whether it be 100, as the more pessimistic scientists suggest, or 1,000 years, or those that I've interviewed and I believe are very honest and very credible because they've looked at all the pieces, and therein lies the difference. The ones that are saying, don't worry now, we'll kick it down the road, they're only seeing the piece that they're an expert in. We took the time, Richard Gale called and I interviewed dozens of individuals who have put all the pieces together. And when they saw all the consequences and all the feedback loops, that's when the timeline went from 1,000 years to 200 years, 100 years, 50 years, 25 years, to under 10 years, when we can begin to see the consequences, where the type of typhoons that we saw this year, the worst in world history since recordings began, and the worst rainfall, the worst storms, the worst drought, will be regular occurrences happening 3 to 5 times a year. I would not want to be in the pathway of another Category 4 or 5 hurricane. It would just be too much. And then you have the other side. If you live in southern Florida, where I do, in the spring, the winter, you have fires. Just this past year, the fire was so bad in 2017 in southern Florida that the homes all around mine were at risk. I had planned on that fire, having ladders and big hoses and all the places to hose things down, fire retardant. But even with all that, if the fire would have hit, the probability would have been that I would have lost most of the buildings. How many times do you want to experience that? And the idea that, well, we'll just rebuild, that doesn't make it any less of a crisis. What I'm looking at today is climate change that is real. But the optimism is a clinging faux optimism. And by refusing to take upon ourselves the appropriate actions when confronted with an immediate emergency. Therefore, it is critical today for humanity to become afraid, to become intensely afraid without being paralyzed. We condemn ourselves only by our failure to wake up. Climate change science poses certain obstacles difficult for the average person to accept. Perhaps most evident is that the science and predictions appear too abstract. They can seem too foreign and impersonal. The calving of an enormous ice sheet in Antarctica or a rapid Himalayan glacier melt, they don't set off alarm bells that threaten our cozy lives in America or Canada or South America or Europe. No, the events are too distant. We know that sea levels are rising. Everyone in Miami, where I used to live for 15 years in Miami Beach, South Beach, and I saw it. They're aware of this fact because flooded areas in the city are now everyday occurrences. Without storms, just a normal nightly surge. The citizens of the Maldives and the Solomon Islands certainly know this because their nations are already sinking forever under rising sea levels. But the image, one's home or condominium along the coast being partially submerged permanently in the Atlantic Ocean, is a time too far off to think about it. So builders are still building. People are running down to Florida in the most precarious areas, those that are absolutely unequivocally going to be taken back by the ocean, made unlivable. And they're plunking down big money to be a part of this. Consequently, real estate developers continue their frenzy to build more residences up and down Florida coast, on the California coast, and people continue to flock to the Sunshine State to purchase a sunny place to retire. It is almost obscene to imagine that 4 of the top 10 cities witnessing the largest influx of migrants within the United States are also the most compromised by more immediate climate change and extreme weather conditions. Houston would be number 1, Miami number 2, Phoenix number 7, Orlando number 10. In August of 2017, Hurricane Harvey submerged over 100,000 homes throughout the greater Houston metropolitan area. And while the storm itself cannot be attributed to humanity's contribution to global warming, the hurricane's intensity and power is certainly related. Rising sea levels, warmer sea off the Texas coast, 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average, making it the hottest spot of ocean surface in the world, are the 2 major factors that made Harvey so catastrophic and deadly. And similar extreme tropic storms are only going to increase as the Earth gets warmer. As the planet's surface heats up and the sea levels rise, climate events becoming increasingly more extreme, consequently our lives becoming more stressed, miserable, insecure, and uncertain. At what point will insurance companies stop insuring at all in high-risk areas? Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, California. And the government could not afford the $1 trillion plus, or choose not to, then there will be no money to rebuild. And people's entire life savings will be wiped out. The British philosopher-poet G.K. Chesterton wrote, "It isn't that they cannot find the solution, it is that they cannot see the problem." Individually, nobody can initiate the kind of grand massive change in collective humanity's relationship to the environment being demanded today. However, each of us can make determined and immediate changes in our personal lives and repair our personal rapport with the earth and nature and the ecology around our homes, neighborhoods, and towns. No honor is gained by sitting and waiting for government to take concerted action to lessen greenhouse gas emissions. They're not going to do it. And overhaul the federal regulatory system to hold private industries and polluters accountable, it will never happen in your lifetime. The corruption of Washington is complete. It is total. It is absolute. It is a cesspool. And it is beyond reform. It is beyond redemption. The entire political process has been corrupted. It has been compromised by special interests. Because government has itself become a private enterprise. Likewise, Americans are waking up to the realization that their votes are useless. Those who need to change the most, elected officials and legislators and corporate CEOs and chairmen and women, professional institutions, will not find the solutions until it is too late. In the meantime, they refuse to see the problem. And this is clearly evident by the fact that the fossil fuel industry is expanding rather than receding. Today, I am laying out the fundamental problem humanity faces. On our final broadcast, I will offer with a panel of experts the solutions. We are facing climate change and global warming accelerating. Although a popular awareness of climate change is growing rapidly, most people still have difficulty connecting the dots between dramatic climate-related crisis and calamities happening in far-off regions of the planet and the impact these very same events have upon their personal lives. Therefore, I will be presenting the climate science in simple lay language, providing crucial examples in order to make global warming a more personal affair. Unless the threats the Earth faces are understood and perceived as a threat to our personal well-being and that of our immediate families and loved ones and friends, the constructive, necessary change so direly needed will be unfound. Nevertheless, we must begin with ourselves because each of us possesses in her or his power the capacity to live in harmony with life and the greater whole of nature, and then we must serve as an example of a conscientious ecological lifestyle to those we meet. In August of 2017, a 900-plus-foot tanker, the Christopher de Margarita, set sail from Russia's North Sea to South Korea. The cruise's novelty was that for the first time in recorded history, a sailing vessel crossed the Antarctic's northern sea route without the need for icebreakers. The ship traveled freely, unencumbered across the broken, melting ice fields. Now, this small incident regarding a tanker carrying natural gas halfway around the globe may seem incidental and insignificant, barely newsworthy. And in fact, it was barely newsworthy. But climatologists and Arctic ecologists see it differently. They see an unexpected and disturbing event. It was another indication that the planet is racing faster towards an ice-free Arctic. It was also warning that global warming is accelerating beyond expectations. Back in 2013, the University of California was predicting that ships would be incapable of traveling freely across the North Pole before 2050. Now, mind you, 4 years ago, they said it'll be 2050 before this happens. However, the Christopher's passage over the Arctic southern frontier was under 7 days. And that's a record. And this voyage would have never been possible without the acceleration of anthropogenic climate change. So do you see people apologizing for being so distantly wrong? But they were. As the Russian vessel made its way across the crown of the planet, at the opposite pole, another surprising event occurred. On July 12, 2017, an iceberg, approximately 2,200 square miles, or roughly the size of the state of Delaware, broke free from the Larsen Sea ice shelf in western Antarctica. This was the third gigantic Antarctic ice sheet to separate from the continent, and it was huge, and it collapsed. It's the largest to date. Glaciologists were startled because the speed of the sheet's disintegration was miscalculated, although the break, commonly known as calving, had been predicted several years prior. It was the suddenness that was disturbing. A week later, glaciologists' predictions were proven wrong a second time. It had not been a clean split, as calculated earlier. Instead, like a stone hitting an auto's windshield, the break triggered a network of fissures indicating that the entire ice sheet was quickly fragmenting and more sheets would be calving, even larger sheets, in the near future. Antarctica is often viewed as the last place on Earth that will be touched by global warming due to humanity's activity. However, 2016 observed a record low of ice, according to the University of Washington, and 2020 is now targeted as the turnaround point when the degradation of the southern polar ice sheets will be directly the result of human activity. Already, atmospheric temperatures in Antarctica have been rising annually by 4 to 6 degrees, and warming seasons are lengthening. Ice sheets melt and calve faster, and eventually the shelves thin faster and disappear. For the 21st century, these two geological events, and many others, are indicative of the greatest threat to humanity, global warming and climate change. For the first time in human history, our species has entered an era of extraordinary and anxious uncertainty. Many are bewildered when they hear about the loss of an Antarctic ice sheet and prolonged droughts and temperatures reaching above 50 degrees Celsius and flash floods, uncontrollable wildfires. What does it mean when we hear that 2016 was the third year in a row to set a new record for average global temperatures? Is this simply a fluke, an aberration in the usual climate patterns we have become accustomed to? Will it continue or will it end? The international scientific community is nearly unanimous in confirming that global warming is accelerating and human activity is its primary driving force. There is also near unanimous certainty the course we are following to reach catastrophic benchmarks is inevitable and completely outside our civilization's control. Those scientists who resist the international consensus are far and few between. The majority of dissenters lack a professional background in the earth and science of space, climatology, glaciology, and other disciplines directly associated with measuring and observing changes in the atmosphere and the Earth's geology. For several decades, scientists the world over have been running simulated climate models repeatedly to determine whether increased warming is anthropogenic or caused by human activity. And repeatedly, whenever human-engineered greenhouse gases, CO2, methane, nitrous oxide, water vapor, and dust, etc., are removed from their equations, they are unable to account for the sudden rise in the Earth's temperature as the result of natural phenomena alone. Already the Earth is warmer than it has been for the past 120,000 years. However, when these same models introduce greenhouse gases into their equations, they accurately correlate with the actual temperature trends being witnessed. Long term, 90% of planetary warming is linked to the actions of humans. The remaining 10%, according to Conrad Stefan, director of the Swiss Polar Institute, is unexplained. It is not uncommon for climatologists to underestimate the swiftness of climate-related events. The statistical computerized models to portend timelines for certain climate tipping points, although highly sophisticated, are unable to account for all the variables and trends, particularly unforeseeable catastrophes such as mammoth biomass emissions from wildfires and other natural and human calamities. For example, researchers would not predict or calculate the expansion and explosion of British Petroleum's Deepwater Horizon facility that discharged up to 520,000 tons of methane into the atmosphere, the equivalent of burning upwards of 3.1 million barrels of crude oil. Consequently, dire findings are either found wanting or too sober as new observations upgrade earlier forecasts. Very soon, the Arctic region will be ice-free throughout the year. Conservatively, the Arctic will lose all of its ice during the warmest months before 2030. Some say earlier. Some say it could be as early as 2022. We're talking about 5 to 10 years. We still don't know precisely many of the long-term consequences to the polar region and to the planet's biosystem once this tipping point is reached. However, there are approximately 4 million people living along the Arctic Circle, including hundreds of thousands of indigenous people. Very likely, most of the coastal communities will be forced to migrate in the near future as shorelines, as they are already doing now, dependent upon ice and freezing temperatures and colder seasons start to crumble and disappear. This has already been happening for the last 5 years. Acceleration is also exacerbated by the thawing permafrost in tundra and the massive release of methane and nitrous oxide in the Arctic. In point of fact, the North Pole is collapsing. The loss of the Arctic's albedo, the white world of ice that reflects the sun's radiation back into space, has already passed its tipping point. For as long as humans have been on the third planet from the sun, we will never return to a time when polar bears and seals thrived on frozen ocean surfaces. We can no longer prevent the Western Antarctic ice sheets, including the Larsen and Ross sheets, from slipping away into the dark oceanic waters. The rush of fresh water from melting glaciers in Greenland are beyond our technological means to prevent the disruption of the Arctic's ocean's conveyor belt. Based upon satellite data feeds, the Greenland sheets, according to David Barber at the University of Manitoba, are now melting 600 times faster than the current modeling trends suggest. Hence, the modelings are outdated. They are useless at this moment. And that's why we can expect to wake up one morning and find some cataclysmic event has occurred, and we will all ask, how is this possible? Why weren't we warned? Why didn't our scientists know? Because they're all using models that do not take into account chaos theory. There is simply a point that we're in now where we cannot accurately measure anything because everything is accelerating, and when it accelerates, it has its own feedback loop. And similarly, due to many complex and unknown factors, We will not know when these events will happen, but they are happening, and they're happening now, with oceans that will rise if the Antarctic melts. For example, one of the largest Antarctic ice sheets rests on solid ground below sea level. On the one hand, this makes the sheet far more unstable, and geologists continue to try to determine its global impact following its last breath. Nevertheless, the loss of the Ross Ice Sheet in West Antarctica alone could raise sea levels 10 to 13 feet, that's 3 to 4 meters. In 2014, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the University of California at Irvine determined the loss of the West Antarctica sheet is unstoppable. There's no power on Earth that can stop it. The circulation of the ocean's warming waters beneath the ice continues to thin and melt the ice. No technology or even a drastic reduction in greenhouse gas emissions can prevent it. As if a warhead missile had already been launched, we can only sit and wait to experience the consequences befalling us upon impact. For many years, scientists were not terribly concerned about a rapid melt of Antarctic ice sheets. The southern pole has always been thought to be the last place on Earth to experience global warming. And for the past 40 years, winter ice has actually increased until recently. In 2016, University of Washington researchers noted a perfect storm of conditions that, if repeated annually, will increase Antarctic ice melts and possibly trend towards declining ice buildup during the winter months. One of the causes the university scientists identified was a change in El Nino patterns that are now reaching the Antarctic. In May of 2014, Climate Central provided a probable scenario of American land loss due to a 10-foot increase in sea levels. That's approximately 28,800 square miles of land mass would disappear with rising waters and force the dislocation of over 12 million people, primarily along the eastern U.S. seaboard. 27 cities in Florida would be most seriously affected. The report determined that the cost of lost property alone would be nearly $1 trillion. That is a very conservative figure. The majority of the loss would be in the southern states, but also a third in New York and New Jersey. The complete loss of 5 million cubic miles of ice now blanketing the earth, including large mountain glaciers, could raise sea levels by 216 feet. San Francisco Bay Area would be a cluster of small islands. Along with Los Angeles and San Diego, the American East Coast would simply vanish. You could say goodbye to London, Venice, the Netherlands, and most of Denmark. From Bangladesh across Southeast Asia to the Great Mountains in Cambodia, only small islets would remain. Mount Fuji would remain as a standing volcano bulging monolithically out of the Pacific. 4 out of 5 Australians would be displaced, and vast regions of Africa would be uninhabitable. Scientists are hopeful that a complete ice-free planet is a long way off, probably is. But without doubt, before we get to a complete ice loss, it's a gradual process, and we're going to get a lot more ice loss, a lot more rising of the sea levels, and even without storms. I saw it in Miami. I remember I would take a walk at night. I would walk from Ocean Drive, where I lived, at 2nd Street. I'd walk across to about 8 or 9 blocks, to Alton Road. And then Alton Road, I would walk up to Lincoln Road, what I consider the most beautiful and unique and architecturally interesting streets in America, if not the most interesting street. And one day I thought that a main broke because there was about 12 inches of water. There had been no storm, and no one knew what it came from. Well, every night that same water was there. And then I found out that it was from the ocean coming in at night when the tides come in, and that was merely a tidal surge. So over a period of time, the city of Miami spent about $200+ million to put a series of generators in that would take the water and throw it back out into the bay. Well, the bay and the Atlantic are connected. As a result, it did no good. And now they want to move many people, several million people from South Beach, which would be uninhabitable in the near future, and Miami Beach back. You're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars. Miami doesn't have that money. The state doesn't have that money. The federal government's not going to give that money. Even though it's necessary to move everyone, too little, too late. I remember running up the beach each morning when I would do a 10-mile run. And when I would run, I would notice that the seaweed was going further and further up. Each year it would increase until I started to see seaweed at the base of some of the swimming pools. And I thought, now's the time to sell because this is not going to stop. It'll only accelerate. And that's exactly what has happened. What I am concerned with today is that we're not paying attention. Just imagine for a moment that we do not do anything. What is the likely outcome? All bad to the bone. Unpredictable events and catastrophic happenings, feedback loops such as wildfires that we're now seeing in California, volcanic eruptions that we're seeing in Mexico and Bali and in Japan, in Africa, oil fires or industrial plant explosions such as the Archemia chemical plant explosion near Houston after Hurricane Harvey, and the numerically increasing extreme weather events, over 110,000 extreme weather events per year around the globe. And we shrug our shoulders and walk away from it, unless it happens to impact us. Harvey's rainfall is estimated to have been the worst in U.S. history and the most devastating storm to hit Houston. 19 trillion gallons of water. For 5 days, the capital of America's fossil fuel industry was flooded with torrential rains and wave surges, shutting down and damaging oil refineries and chemical plants along Texas's eastern coast. Over 1 million pounds of toxic pollutants and greenhouse gases were released. Such events fall outside the realm of computerized simulations and cannot be accurately included in predictive climate models. And for this reason, scientific conclusions often are far more conservative than the actual state of the planet. Therefore, we must start to realize that there is no precedent on the Earth's $4.6 billion a year geological timeline to serve as a reliable baseline to accurately calculate climate-related events in the Anthropocene age. There is ingrained in the cultural DNA of modern civilization a mythic delusion that is at best ignored and largely denied by people whose lives depend upon the emotional security in believing in economic and scientific advancement to cure our problems. This blind faith is simply a sign of our addiction to progress. It is a myth that underlies our neoliberal capitalist agenda that praises infinite progress and infinite growth and infinite profits and infinite power and development. It is also a myth embedded in our major religions, particularly in the Abrahamic traditions, which gave rise to the 18th century economist Adam Smith's metaphor of the capitalist marketplace as the work of the invisible hand of God, he said. The modern myth has been beautifully described and elaborated upon by ecological activist Derek Jensen in his The Myth of Human Supremacy. And this dangerous idea, which depends upon being close-minded and blind to the non-human intelligences all around us, to the trillions of organisms and microbes and plants and animals upon which our lives and survival depend, is driving humanity towards its own annihilation. There's a peculiar arrogance when sentimental environmentalists proclaim the earth is sick and humanity must unite and collectively gather together and heal her. This view also permeates the myth of human supremacy over nature and further reinforces the assumption shared by most members of the scientific community and private corporations and many environmentalists and also high government officials who have an unswerving faith in the potentials of human intelligence and ingenuity to override the forces of nature. Well, regardless of how critical or even desperate a situation becomes, there dangles before us the faux promise that we can find the technology to solve all of our problems. But humanity is not a savior for the simple fact that the earth does not need saving, except from our own limited, awry perception and destructive actions. Global warming, writes Roy Scranton, author of Learning to Die in the Anthropocene, is what is called a wicked problem. It doesn't offer any clean solutions, only better or worse responses. Regardless of the billions of tons of carbon dioxide and methane and greenhouse gases our culture pumps into the atmosphere, regardless of how acidic we turn the oceans, the Earth will tweak and retweak itself in order to return to its homeostasic state, with or without the numerous species now faced with extinction. It will continue to self-organize and reestablish stability. It will require many thousands of years after the Anthropocene has passed before she finds a new balance and bursts anew, albeit without us, or the presence of countless other creatures and beings extinguished by climate change. This was the overriding theme of Alan Weisman's best-selling thought experiment, The World Without Us, later made into a PBS special, which portrayed the planet coming alive again after humanity destroyed itself. Earth will heal nicely, thank you, without our technological interventions and the hubris of the superiority complex unique to our species. There are certain dominant characteristics that define psychopathic behavior. One is the inability to feel remorse over destructive behavior or for committing a crime that inflicts terrible suffering upon another. Another common psychopathic trait is to regard violent acts as permissible and perhaps even beneficial. Therefore, we destroy and kill thousands of species, live off a diet responsible for the butchering of tens of billions of animals each year, mow over ecosystems for mining and development, or to raise livestock and sow genetically engineered crops, survey and drill some more into the Earth's last drops of fossil fuels, all in the name of capitalist growth and expansion. At the same time, corporations and global elite, the captains of industry, our government, international banks, our think tanks and educational institutions, and the corporate media whitewash these ecocidal actions as being virtuous and necessary in order for us to enjoy the comforts and ease of postmodern civilization. Perversely, we're being told it is better to sustain the artifacts of our modern culture than the Gaian life support necessary to live, breathe, and nourish us. Such a view is pathologically dangerous, and it is indicative of the human psychology that today defines the Anthropocene age. I'm Gary Null, along with our scholar in residence who has spent thousands of hours and many years doing all of the research we could, bringing together as many pieces as we could to present part one of our four, possibly five-part series. On our next program, part two, the Anthropocene Age, what it is, what it means, and what is likely the outcome. Thank you for listening.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up? This is a big party, man. Yeah, brother, I can dig it. many of you cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see, oh, what's going on.